You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic. I'm Cameron Lalana.
And I'm Matt Garasimovich.
And today we're covering part two, chapter 28 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate, returning to... Hold on, give me a second. Obersturm von Führer Liss. Ooh, wow, I'm going to cut that one out or just censor it. Pretty German speakers in our audience. Mm-hmm. Who is just overseeing the construction of what will become a death camp. The crematoria, the gas chambers. More than that, overseeing the production of presumably Zyklon B. Other materials outside that are being made in other cities, flying around, reporting to Himmler, getting ready to meet with Eichmann himself. A rough chapter. Is there anywhere that you'd like to begin in talking about this?
Yes, there is this part that I thought was so interesting in this chapter. And it is about the interpersonal dynamics of Liss and what he's kind of up to in this chapter, because of course he's overseeing the construction of this building and this apparatus, and this is a very important job that he has been tasked with, and you would kind of think that that would be where his sole focus is, but it is not. Most of his focus seems to be on the fact that he's going to meet Eichmann in Berlin, and that's going to be nice because then he'll be able to see his sick wife and spend some time at his country house. And he, of course, at the end of this chapter gets the orders that Eichmann is on his way and they will not be meeting in Berlin. So this is the backdrop sort of everything that's happening in all the conversations from this chapter. And it's just kind of interesting that the emotional center of the chapter is on Liss not being able to, you know, have a nice evening at his country house and listen to the artillery in the distance and, you know, whatever, walk around in his slippers or whatever else he wants to do. Whereas the way that the death apparatus that is being constructed is described is this very sort of sterile, neutral language. There's just nothing really, unless you know, I guess like just the way that it is described is all I'm saying, is very different than you might expect, different than normally how we read about these things. Describing the sort of different mechanisms and how they work, the fact that the ball mills for the human bones are nestled between tubes and pipes and heaps of rails. It's not the primary concern, it's just a concern, right? There's a lot of examples like this throughout the chapter that you can point to.
Yeah, definitely. And that example in particular is one that really struck me. Not only is a method for collecting human bones in the middle of a paragraph about just various materials, I think it's also the only explicit reference to human death in pretty much this whole chapter. Elsewhere, it's either entirely avoided or referred to simply as organic matter. And there's kind of wrote about this today. There's something so industrial, and it really feels like a corollary to the way Grossman returns humanity to the victims of the Holocaust. But when he approaches the Holocaust itself, the totalizing nature of the industrial, the inhuman, is overwhelming. There is, without just taking a few words out, you could be building pretty much anything theoretically here. And that it's really haunting to see that this vast machinery of dehumanization. And I didn't touch on, I like that you started on Liss's desires. That's something that I was thinking a lot about, but the chapter for today was already too long, so I didn't have a chance to touch on that. But I'm really also struck by the last three paragraphs of this chapter are really striking to me. And you have Liss, like you say, his trip to Berlin has been dashed. He can't hang out with his wife. He can't see his mistress. And he's as he's looking at materials, he's thinking about that. And it said, apparently, he seems quite a little out, put out. And the narrator says, the engineers, chemists, and architects all looked at him, wondering what anxieties could be troubling a man of Lys's importance. And there's just something, I don't know, an additional layer of, for many of these engineers, as in the following chapter, there's it's in the following paragraph, they seem to have a sense that they're creating some sort of monster, there's some sort of malaise around this, not a real moral quandary about what they're doing, but some vague sense of inhumanity. And they look at Lys and like, what could he be wondering in this moment? He's like, God damn it, I can't see the student I'm seeing on the side.
Yeah, like it, I don't know, it just adds a horribly perverse additional layer to all of these scenes, and it just makes it again very complex.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you see the film Zone of Interest?
Yeah.
Yeah, this chapter, I saw it on actually the recommendation of one of our listeners, Reagan. And this chapter really struck me
Yeah,
as
it
this
did.
touching on a lot of the same themes, except for, well, for Lys especially, this kind of unrepentant manager of this whole operation. I'd say like the kind of maybe the only difference divergence I see is in Zone of Interest. Which of course the film, if you're not familiar, is follows the Haas family, the commandant at I want to say Auschwitz, and their day to day, which pretty much entirely excludes the machinery of Auschwitz from its direct explicit narrative, other than the sounds really in the distance and some moments here and there, but. They're, you know, that family's entirely unaffected. They're going on about their day-to-day lives, which is very similar to how Lys is going about it here. The only difference I'd say is that everyone is unrepentant and Zone of Interest, whereas here there is this strange malaise. It really only appears in the final, in the final few lines of some of these builders who it says there were moments when they felt the chamber. I believe they're referring to the gas chambers. There were moments when they felt the chamber might already have broken free of its creators, might already be about to live its own concrete life, feeling its own concrete hunger, secreting toxins, masticating with its steel jaws, beginning the long process of digestion. And so you have this sort of almost I don't want to say the word anthropomorphization. It's like it, but you know, bringing to life this monster they're creating to really heighten this effect. And it's the only moment of, I would say, real emotion in relation to the machinery they're creating. And so I don't know if I have an exact point to make on it. It's just interesting that this is this vague malaise. Maybe you could tie it, as I was thinking about, to how Grossman thinks about fascism, where it is this essentially deleterious force, although not one that can invariably destroy the human soul. So it's one that's kind of bearing down on these people and erasing their humanity, but there's some core element which still seems to be saying this is wrong, even though it's tiny. Very, very tiny.
Yeah, you could read it that way. I sort of almost read it as a, I don't know. I don't know how much remorse I read built into it.
I don't know if I read any remorse as so much as just like some nagging, like lingering human like notion that this is wrong, not expressed in anything particular, just, you know,
Yeah.
thinking of this machinery as monstrous in a way, but very subconsciously. Before we wrap up today, I did want to mention two last things. The first one is a reader comment, which I totally forgot to get to earlier, but it's from Leia, who says, I am still, very slowly, reading Eichmann in Jerusalem, so it was interesting to see his name pop up in this chapter. We're going to be seeing more of that. The internal memoranda of the RSHA that's brought to light during his trial is startling for using this same type of euphemistic language, shipments and liquidations, etc. Apparently, Eichmann was made almost physically ill after witnessing an extermination van in progress, so it's not difficult to imagine that this distancing language has to exist for them to be able to uphold the fascistic ideal. Also interesting to see how this connects to Strum and his colleagues regarding theory versus practical application. Yeah, so as you can tell, we're kind of thinking in parallel with Leia here, and it's great to bring in this real-world perspective on how the these characters who are fictionalized here really did act in the real world. You know, and then on top of that, the writing in this chapter, I'd say it just the relentless industrial nature of it is just so haunting. So I mean, you can listen to us talk about it or you can go read it yourself. If you haven't already done so, I would definitely recommend you read this one.
Yeah, why don't you listen to us? Go read the gross man himself.
Go read the gross man himself, indeed. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on in this chapter?
No, that was pretty much where I wanted to leave it this fine evening.
Cool. Well, in that case, you will all hear from us again soon.